Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is Wednesday, the 7th of December. Very nice to have you with us. Let us begin by introducing our panel, and then we will get started and talk about the news of the day. WAMC's Alan Char talking here. Good morning, Alan.
And good morning to you, Joe, and to all of you, the rest of you out there.
And we also thank and welcome political consultant Libby Post.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And corporate attorney Rich Honan is back. Good morning.
Jay Don, how you doing?
I'm good, Rich Ho.
That's even better.
I think it would actually be Arho.
Arho?
Okay. I have to check my street name.
Arho, as in O-U-R?
Right.
H-O? Okay.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Whatever. Good morning. Welcome.
Morning.
Very nice to have you all here. A reminder, you can join in on the fun, and don't you want to? It's panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we'd love to hear what is on your mind this morning. We have several issues to talk about. Let us begin with the story coming out of the New York Times that there, we discussed this on Monday. Libby was here for that, Alan too, of course, which was about the call from President-elect Donald Trump. Now we learn that former Senator Bob Dole, acting as a foreign agent for the government of Taiwan, worked behind the scenes over the past 6 months to establish high-level contact between Taiwanese officials and Trump's staff, an outreach effort that culminated last week in an unorthodox telephone call between Mr. Trump and Taiwan's president. Mr. Dole, a lobbyist with a Washington law firm, Alston and Byrd, coordinated with Mr. Trump's campaign and the transition team to set up a series of meetings between Mr. Trump's advisors and officials in Taiwan. According to disclosure documents filed last week with the Justice Department, Mr. Dole also assisted in successful efforts by Taiwan to include language favorable to it in the Republican Party platform, according to the documents. Bob Dole's firm received $140,000 from May to October for the work, according to the forms, which I have to say I didn't think seemed like that
much. Piece of change.
It's $23,333 a month.
That's right, but that's right in the range, right?
My range, honey, but yeah, somebody else's. I'd be very happy.
Raise your rates.
Even here in Albany, right, $2,500 a month to $20,000 a month is about what you hear from
you
lobbyists.
Would probably know this better than I would. I don't know this.
Here's the point. It has nothing to do with how much. It has to do with the propriety of running a foreign policy based on your buddies in the area. Now, look, we all know how lobbying works. The big lobbyists get big money when their friends win. We have certainly seen that here. We saw when Shelley Silver was in power, Pat Lynch was the go-to person in town. When Shelley Silver goes out of power, her business falls. In this case, somebody makes a telephone call. I remember when Alphonse D'Amato, wasn't it D'Amato who made a very famous call for which he got $50,000? I think I remember that, but maybe I'm wrong. In any case, look, this is part of what we have to monitor in government, and it's not it isn't right.
Not that this is overly surprising, but we should note that this was the first that Bob Dole was really one of the only Republican nominees or former presidents who supported
presidential candidates.
Right.
So the fact that he was with him in June and July, he actually showed up at the convention. So there has been a relationship there. Rich, what do you make of this?
I pretty much agree with Alan. I think that I don't think United States senators should be lobbying for foreign governments. Just period. I you're right. I know how it works. I know everybody's doing it. I know that that's how the game is played. I don't like that. I will say, if the Trump team was looking to reach out to Taiwan to poke at China or for any other reason, and they used you know, the lobbyist, you know, the lobbyist to kind of grease those wheels. I have less of an issue with that. We could talk about politically whether, you know, what our entrees towards Taiwan should be. I don't disagree with it, but I know it's hard to use the word unseemly about Washington. I think it's unseemly for former, and I think Tom Daschle was involved as well.
Yes.
I don't think senators should be lobbying for foreign governments, period.
Well, just watch the political chessboard. Donald Trump will say, I'll support TPP if Taiwan is made a part of it.
Maybe.
Just wait.
Possible.
That's exactly
but,
what
but I was going to say something else about what Rich just said. You know, what happens with a lot of these guys, both in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, is they never go home. You know, they never go home. They get a house in, you know, in McLean or whatever, and they will, and then they just stay there. And when their term is up, they still stay there. So, so all I'm saying is that's what happens to them. Now, I agree with Rich about one thing here, and I'm very nervous, and I may have to change my opinion because I'm in agreement with Rich so much this morning. But
well, we just started.
Yeah, we're only 8 minutes.
But what about this business of representing a foreign government? He is a registered agent of a foreign government.
Yeah.
That's very different than, you know, just taking some.
So is Dick Gephardt and Tom Daschle.
Yeah. Well, so.
And I'm sure more.
And not only that, but they get their salary and health care for the rest of their lives anyway. So this is the kind of thing that we were hearing from Donald Trump that was outside of the parameters of doing business usually.
Well, this was the swamp activity.
Right. Yeah. I mean, his cabinet is full of from the swamp.
Yeah, except for one less transition man
who's back in the swamp in New Jersey.
Who is off this morning. No. I'm not talking about...
You're talking about the son of Flynn.
Oh, Flynn. Thankfully, I mean, that's a good sign that at least they're not letting somebody who's peddling fake news.
It was so blatant.
I know it was. It was so blatant. But, I just want to go back. I mean, you know, Trump made a big deal about the TPP in his campaign. He was against it. It's bad. But now this is a way to tweak China, you know, mainland China, and it's a way for him to go into that partnership saying, look, I got one of our friends.
Well,
somebody
if you're
we
right,
should be friends
I
with.
Don't know that you're right.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think it's a bargaining chip for him.
I think trying to turn
everything around.
I agree with that, Libby, and I think that, you know, from what little we can tell about, you know, how Trump operates at the moment, his negotiating strategy seems to be he takes a no holds barred opening position,
yeah.
You know, and then there's some movement, you know, kind of later on. I can't say that's a wrong way to go. I don't know if it'll be effective or not, but I like it better, I will tell you, than a lot of political positions where you have your position and then you have to water it down to get into the primary. Then you have to water it down more to win the general. Then you have to water it down more when you negotiate with Congress. Then you have to water it down more when you negotiate with the other side. And I just like that he starts starts from, you know, a more extreme position and then loses less of the watering down process.
Well, thank goodness. Finally, I have something to disagree
with.
There you go.
Good.
And the reason is that Trump became the president of the United States on some of the most outlandish, racist, misogynist positions.
Anti-Semitic.
Positions that, you know, I'm sticking with what I'm saying. You can say what you want to say.
Well, he certainly gave voice to anti-Semitism.
Well, he's given voice to a certain kind of bullying, but I have to say that he gets to be president based on the outlandish stuff. The reason I don't like, I'm not in sympathy with what Rich just said, even though it's a good business strategy, is he gets to be president on the back of those terrible things that he said. And now he's softening his position on a lot of them. Well, I don't think that's right. And I see a spate of bullying around the United States that we haven't seen before and nothing like it. And therefore, I'm never going to forgive him for what he said during the campaign.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What some people don't understand is, you know, he's going to go after Roe v. Wade. He's going to go after reproductive rights. He wants to close down. You know, he's going to play the Paul Ryan game of shutting down Planned Parenthood. Well, that's going to mean that women will not have access to reproductive health care. They won't have access to abortion services. But then also there will be economic impacts in those communities because there will be people who will lose their jobs. Those salaries will no longer be spent in their local communities. Rent will no longer be paid. I mean, there's more. I see it from a reproductive rights and a women's point of view, but there's also an economic impact, domino effect here that nobody is talking about. It's easy for people with means to be able to go and get an abortion. It will not be easy for women without means to be able to get reproductive health care, the full spectrum. They'll have these children, and then the Republicans want to cut entitlements. And so where are these people going to go? What are they going to do? How are they going to feed their kids?
Well, terrible, terrible, terrible. It is. Yeah. It's really terrible.
It is horrible.
But when we're talking about the positions that Trump takes in order, as Rich would say, to modify. Now, I don't happen to think that Roe is one he's going to modify. I think that that's one. It's a given that in order to satisfy sort of base that he had, he's staying with that.
That's
one.
Right.
On the others, he'll probably do a lot of modification.
And he has pledged to sign a bill that will make it legal to discriminate based on one's religious beliefs, which is targeting the LGBT community. I mean, it's like...
I'm sorry, would you fill us in on that? Because I don't...
Oh, yeah, there's a bill. It's called the Religious Freedom Act, which will nationally allow people to discriminate against others based on their religious beliefs, which means that the cake baker can get away with that with not making a cake for a gay couple. It means a doctor can deny a gay man with AIDS services because he doesn't believe in being gay.
He I have heard
that
of
sort
this,
of stuff. Yeah, I mean, and he's going to sign that. Now, what's interesting, he has said gay marriage, same-sex marriage, it's settled, marriage equality, because of the Supreme Court. It's settled. Yet Roe v. Wade, which is also a Supreme Court decision, is not.
Good point.
We'll see.
Yeah, I certainly hope he does not attack Roe v. Wade. As I said before in this program, if he does, I think, you know, I would certainly, along with a lot of other people, fight that, you know, as hard as is humanly possible.
He may not have a choice.
Yeah, he is going to attack it.
It doesn't strike me that it's as high on his list of priorities as some other things, but, you know.
It's hard to know, Rich, what his priority list is.
Well, I don't know that it's. I don't think it's
well,
that
you're
hard
the
to
one
know.
Who just I mean, said he keeps modifying
right.
things.
He modifies, but he's talking about many of the same issues. He's talking about the economy. He's talking about freer trade. He's talking about immigration. He's talking about reducing waste in government. I think he's been consistent. You could disagree, and I know you strongly do, on where he stands on those positions, law and order, whatever you want to call it. He's been fairly consistent that those are where he's going to spend his time. Obamacare, you know, I don't know that any of those are a big surprise.
Well, the hospital industry came out against dismantling Obamacare because what you're going to have is 20 million people without health care who will be going to the emergency rooms for a common cold.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know that it's in the works to repeal it and leave nothing in its place.
We're hearing 3 years now.
Yeah, right.
Three years is a long time, as Mario Cuomo used to tell me.
That's right.
Between now and then, a new pope could be born.
That's right. And we all know that Medicare and Social Security is the third rail of politics. And if they start going after that, I think it could really undermine everything they do. So hopefully they will go after it so that we can undermine them.
I do want to mention something that Alan had brought up earlier in regards to when we were talking about Bob Dole specifically about Al D'Amato. But yes, Al D'Amato in 2003 as a lobbyist made $500,000 to make a single phone call on behalf of a client to the chairman of the MTA to save a deal that was said to be going sour.
Yeah, get Charlie off the MTA.
Which is why, by the way, they do, you know, in lobbying generally.
And so you look at that payday.
Yeah.
Well, 23.
Well, and how long was the call?
Yeah.
but that's why lobbying contracts now are set as, you know, monthly. Whether it's $20,000 a month, whatever, because
not a one time.
Yeah. Right. Now, what you'll tell, basically, you make the one phone call and you've done everything they want you to do for the year. But that's just the way it's set up.
So, yeah, but good for Bob Dole for being a player, huh?
I saw him. I actually do see him. I actually saw them interview him. He's 93.
93 years old, but still.
He's still doing it.
Still working it.
He's in a wheelchair now.
But he's been in a wheelchair for a while, but I thought he was
okay. As long as the ears are, and the everything between the ears are working.
Anybody think there was any symbolism to the fact that obviously Dole's law firm, you know, made this you know, public, you know, they wanted to kind of crow about it. I say obviously. I assume that I don't know. I shouldn't say. I'm
my sense
take that
is
back.
It came out of the filing.
Yeah. That's probably true. But you can direct people to public filings. It happens all the time. I wonder if also any symbolism that on the Pearl Harbor anniversary, you have the war hero coming out.
And, yeah, that's true.
It's just interesting.
Let's get to some letters. We have about a minute and a half before we go to our break, and then we'll move on to other topics. We have a lot more to talk about.
Bob wants to know, is it possible that Trump is capable of adjusting to reality? The firing of Michael Flynn Jr. from Trump's transition team for continue to push a false news story about a D.C. pizzeria running a pedophilia ring after it led to a near-shooting tragedy suggests that embarrassing disclosures may have had an effect on him. Hopefully, continuing scrutiny of Flynn Sr., who also tweets and retweets false news and anti-Semitic items, will lead to his getting the heave-ho as well. Well, that's right. Does anybody know, by the way, one of the things that's been passing my mind, so I'm assuming it's passing others, did they ever get the shooter in the pizzeria who shot?
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah.
I thought they got him fairly soon.
Yeah, I think they got him at the scene.
And
yeah.
he's on his way to the pokey, I hope.
He has been taken into custody. I don't know the specific charges.
Ronald says, if the government wants to pay $7 million, then New York City should only provide $7 million worth of protection. As Trump would say, you get what you pay for. I think others said it before him. All right. And then Barbara says, your guest, whose name I confess I miss, Rich Honan,
yes.
Or maybe Livy Post, just commented that that's how the game is played. Regardless, Dole and other lobbyists, it occurs to me—
That was me.
It occurs to me that this is what sum to all of the problem is with politics anymore, is a game to them. It's a game to them, and whoever ends up with the most marbles wins. No matter how they got the marbles or what it means to the country, just got to get those marbles. Now, I agree with that.
All right.
Wait.
We're going to hold there.
Can't. Okay. Go.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion for this December 7th. Very nice to have you aboard. Let's go to a couple of other topics. Let's talk about Air Force One. Well, this has made quite the story, hasn't it? Citing high cost, Donald Trump says that Boeing's contract to build Air Force One should be canceled. He took to Twitter saying, cancel the order. And then speaking to reporters moments later in the lobby of Trump Tower, he said the effort to build a plane is totally out of control. It's going to be over $4 billion for the Air Force One program. I think it's ridiculous. I think Boeing is doing a little bit of a number. We want Boeing to make a lot of money, but not that much money. Now, meanwhile, back at Boeing, they have said that this is part of a contract that they have the plane that we're talking about would not come into play for almost a decade.
In the 2020s.
Yes. I guess the protocol is one president doesn't order his or her own plane.
Yes. Well,
the protocol. They order it for the next.
So
presidency.
It all comes out of the Air Force. The Air Force works on the plane, and there are two. There are two planes.
Right.
And with emerging technologies, those planes have to make sure that the planes have the technology that is necessary. So we have the current planes, and then the new planes will come into service within 8 to 10 years.
Right.
Okay. So, but then we learn that apparently what is possible is that Donald Trump was actually upset about an article that came from in which the head of Boeing was quoted as saying that some of the trade talk that the president-elect had been making was concerning. So that seemed to come, that was published, and then moments later, this statement came out, and there several journalists and others are putting the two and two together and saying that if you announce one, and then he was reacting to that as opposed to a real policy.
And not reacting to the thing that came out on almost the same day, which was the $125 billion cost-cutting study that the Pentagon had allegedly deep-sixed.
That was later, though. Right. That was later. That was later.
But that was all around the same time, and the knowledge of that was already out there.
Well, it's the usual.
But I want to hear Alan and Libby defend the Pentagon procurement practices.
On the contrary, I was sitting here biding my time, waiting to say we have a military-industrial complex. Mm-hmm. We know it. We know cost overrides are terrible. We know, for example, that billions of dollars are being spent on submarines in Groton, which many of the congressmen that we have interviewed here have defended assiduously because it's jobs and they know what their bread is buttered. But it's a terrible situation. I don't really believe, I think it's, frankly, a brilliant move on Trump's part. To say that. He's well known for walking into meetings where an agreement has been reached and saying, nah, I'm not giving you this kind of money. I'm giving you a tenth of it. And if you don't like it, lump it and get out of here. So this is typical Trump stuff. And I think the American people are going to eat it up.
To a point. I think the American people will eat it up to a point and fed up.
Well,
when people start being hurt by his... really in their pocketbook by his cavalier attitude. Whether or not Boeing should get all that money, it's beyond my pay grade. However, there are people whose jobs depend on that contract, and there are people who are going to be hurt by it. So, I'm thinking he's going to keep doing this. He's also tweeting one thing to obfuscate another, and this is a perfect example
of it.
Well,
you can come up with both.
But I just think that people, I do not think that the American people will stand for this forever. And I think that, I think the midterms will be a test of this.
Libby, forever, shmorever. But I'm going to tell you right now, I like it.
You like him?
No, I don't like him. I like it. I like the fact that he said, this is crazy.
Sure.
And we all know about cost overrides on all of these things. This is crazy. It is the military-industrial complex. And I'm sorry, Libby, I don't want to start psychoanalyzing anybody in this room. But I am about...
if we do, it'll be me.
I do that a lot. And I am about to tell you that, you have to take a step back and take a look at what's being done. You may not like them. I don't like them, that's for sure. I already announced this morning why I don't like them. But if it's a shrewd move, it's a shrewd move, and I think it is.
I'm not saying that it wasn't a shrewd move. I'm just saying that I don't think the American people will buy it forever. That's all.
Well, we're not at forever right now. We're at for step one, in which he said it. And the idea that presidents are riding around in that kind of... Look, people are going to write us letters and say the president has to be in touch at all times and you have to have the most important ability to do that. Meanwhile,
I could do that on Southwest.
To withstand a nuclear war. How are you going to do that? What are you going to have, like a shield?
Don't worry about
it?
That. They're going to be under the mountain anyway.
But the concerns here, I think we're missing some of the concerns. The concerns are that he mentioned a $4 billion program. It's not a $4 billion program. It's a slightly over $2 billion program.
No, it's a $3.7 billion program. The estimate by now is already 3.7, and he rounded to 4, which it probably will be by the time they build
without
the thing.
Without question. If it's already 3.7, it's going to be 4.
But it's more than 2,
maybe
Joe,
seven.
Because it was $2 billion
the
just
budgeted
for...
costs. For the Air Force One replacement program are $2.8 billion for the fiscal years 2015 through 2021. The aircraft manufacturing company issued a statement clarifying that it is currently under contract for $170 million to determine the capabilities of the new aircraft. We are currently under contract for that $170 to help determine the capabilities of these complex military aircraft that serve the unique requirements of the President of the United States, which includes surviving a nuclear attack, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We look forward to working with the U.S. Air Force in subsequent phases of the program, allowing us to deliver the best planes for the President at the best value for the American taxpayer. The preliminary process is expected to determine the ultimate cost that the forthcoming Air Force One aircraft will actually call cost to taxpayers.
And yeah, by the way, I believe that Boeing, I believe Boeing stock went down immediately.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but it ended the day.
Yeah, and then it comes back.
It ended the day.
First of all, the just think about some of those. If you go to the actual report that is cited in a lot of these, which is actually pretty fascinating, it's one of the it's like the Air Force report on what they're buying, and this is like paid. Go to the report; it's page 158, where they're talking about the capital. It's like the presidential something capitalization program, but $2 billion of it is for research and development. So there's a procurement cost there of something like $280 million, and I'm not sure what that means. I'm not sure if that's the cost of the plane, or if that, or if procurement means something else. You know, maybe that's what, maybe that's some other cost. But $2 billion for research and development. This is a new version of a plane that they've already made. And the and Joe, the study that you just cited, $170 million to what? To discuss the parameters of the plane.
To determine the capabilities of the new aircraft.
$170 million?
And then they...
And remember, the reason they've been picked is because they're the ones who've made the plane before. I got to tell you, I personally, and I know I'm the corporate guy here, I think that Boeing and whoever else is doing the plane, I think they should do the plane for free. I think it's an honor to do Air Force One. And I think when last year Boeing got, what, $16 billion from the government? Lockheed got $36 billion from the government. Yeah, I think among all of them, every 20 years they can do a free couple of planes for the United States government. I think they should do it for free. And I can tell you another thing, as somebody who's who has client, big-time clients who are always looking for cost savings and cost cutting, I'm surprised that the government isn't asking them for something like that.
And by the way, let's all remember two words, cost overrun, cost overrun, cost overrun. There's always, Joe, there's always something in that contract that allows them to get more money when this thing is done. And it's you can be really cynical and know that it's never what the contract price was.
Well, let's not forget that it was Dwight Eisenhower.
You bet.
Who warned us against the military-industrial complex. Just saying. And he was part of it. That's all.
Let's go to the letters.
Oh, letters. Okay. Melinda says, aren't Trump's neckties made in Taiwan? Wonder what other ties he has there. Get
nice,
it?
Nice, nicely
no,
done.
No conflicts of interest, I'm sure. And Julie says, if Trump flies in his own plane, he can kick the press off. Couldn't he? Well, I think he can kick anybody off any plane. I don't think he's there's a mandatory law that says you have to let the press on your plane with you.
Whether it's Air Force One or not,
right? Okay, Lee says, I'm retired and spend most of my time out on our deck. WMC is always playing there on the radio. As a result, we have the best informed squirrels and chipmunks and rabbits and birds on the planet. Would that they could vote, Lee from Odina. Okay. And unseemly doesn't cover Dole's actions here. How is this in any way legal if his client is a foreign government? He registers as a lobbyist for a foreign government. You're allowed to do that.
But why is it, but they're right. Why is that legal? Well, why is somebody who is entrusted with the secrets and the confidence that a United States senator had allowed to now go work for a foreign government, even a friendly foreign government?
I'm going to tell you why. Because all those guys who are voting on whether it should be legal are saying,
right.
I'll be
That's
there
exactly
one day,
it.
Too. Yeah, okay.
That's exactly it.
What are the chances our Congress will vote to criminalize such behavior in the future? Zero to none. We've established what they are. Now they're just dickering over price. That's the old joke. Yes. You remember all that. Okay. John Mark says, okay, can you talk about the economic impact of a wall with Mexico, given the amount of business traffic from spare parts from Mexico to the U.S. vis-a-vis NAFTA? Won't this likely hurt the very people in the Rust Belt and other regions who are supporting Trump? This aside from the fact that there are many tunnels across the border, much like in Palestine.
Spare parts?
Well, no. In other words, they make spare parts in Mexico.
Right, are used here.
And that they use them here.
But presumably, those aren't smuggled across the border.
No, they're not. Well, that's a good point.
I mean...
That's a good point. Okay, you make a good point. And by the way, there ain't going to be no wall.
Maybe a little fence.
So that's the end of that one. Peter says, cake bakers are just the beginning. Those who are proposing these laws want to eliminate job protections where they exist, along with adoption, child custody, and hospital visitation by LGBT. And that's from Peter.
Absolutely.
You make a good point, and there's been a lot of reaction to what you had to say about this. Grace said, no president can personally alter abortion rights. The power of the president in this matter is to choose justice who can alter the present law, which Trump will do. Well
that's true, so far as it goes.
Close.
Right,
yeah,
right. It's about true. Who's the next pick for the Supreme Court.
Nurse Cowell writes us, I have a hard time picturing a man who paid $1 million per crystal chandelier in his casino being concerned about government waste. Ha! Well, Nurse Carol, I'm going to tell you right now, that's one thing is one thing and the other thing is the other thing, if you know what I mean.
Right. He's not concerned about it. He's just making hay about it.
And also it speaks to his personality, likes showy stuff. Mike says, can anyone tell me the difference between fake news and lies? Also, I'm wondering, does the pizzeria owner in D.C. have a case against the site that published the fake news about his establishment? Lawyer Rich, what do you think?
That's actually pretty interesting. Off the top of my head, I guess if they negligently printed something that caused them harm, I think it might be a simple negligence
and
case as opposed to like a libel or
and what about the person
case.
Who uttered it in the first place?
Perhaps so.
Wasn't it? I just read something briefly yesterday. It was on Reddit, but it was on like some. Really,
I don't read Reddit.
Yeah, me neither. But somebody made the statement that Reddit was racist. It was on some really deep down feed within Reddit. So,
yes.
So it wasn't that Reddit's racist. It's just that
which by the way leads. I'm sure Joe is going to take it up with us at some point. So the social media attempts to get rid of some of the racist and homophobic and other stuff that's on there before the government gets to it.
Yes.
Right.
And also, we have the terrorism story, too, coming out of them all working together.
Yep,
let's take a break. We'll be back and continue with some letters. We'll be right back. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, and Rich Honan make up the panel this morning. We welcome your letters roundtable at WAMC. No, I'm sorry. It's panel at WAMC.org.
Ooh.
Yes, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from MPAC, presenting composer Kate Soper's Ipsa Dixit, an evening of theatrical chamber music, drawing texts by Freud, Aristotle, Wittgenstein, Lydia Davis, and more, December 9th, empac.rpi.edu. George Heigl, Cowan's representative, available for estate, trust, and full collection evaluations and consultations in the Capital Region, 518-396-7974. Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts. Providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more, ParadiseCopies.com. And Christmas Tree Farmers and Hudson Valley Wine Trails, celebrating wine and trees this holiday season, NewYorkWineAndTrees.com for holiday event details.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion panel at WAMC.org. If you want to share your thoughts on the topics that we're talking about this morning, we have more letters. Alan has them in his hand. He'll start reading them right now.
Okay. Libby's absolutely right. The new administration's plans for Planned Parenthood will absolutely ensure poverty for generations of many families. Okay. Also, they want me to have somebody on the radio who can't because I'm related to her. Okay. Let's see here. In the Trump thank you speech in North Carolina last night, he specifically said he would ban ex-office holders from lobbying for foreign countries. His relationship with Dole is once again an example of his hypocrisy. Rich's defense of a candidate who charges changes his tune at each step of his campaign is also hypocritical. Is it right to lie to attain what you want? Well, that certainly is my position, Bill, in kindergarten.
Wait.
So
this,
he lied
this,
to get
this
to
is the first politician who's ever had one who's ever had one platform that has then evolved when he got into office.
You know this business about two wrongs make a right. I always answer, you know, those kinds of positions. So we get it a lot. Rosemary does it a lot also. So you're doing it too, you know, saying, well, he's not the first, so therefore it's okay.
No, but it's what happens. I seem to remember Obama running on health care reform. Did we ever get that? No, it turned into health insurance reform.
Well, he tried.
Okay, but his tune changed pretty quick.
Hi, panel. Trump, like the cynical Republicans that came before him, talk a good game about Roe v. Wade that plays to their base during their campaigns, but once in office, do nothing about it, so do not worry. Bob, you could not be more wrong. He's going to do it. I have no doubt he's going to appoint Supreme Court judges. All he needs to do is just appoint one, and right. That's the end of it.
That's right.
So I just disagree with you. I just think you're wrong. And basically, when you say something like that, to not worry about it, that's exactly when everybody should be worrying, if you think it through. Anthony says, we want them to make money, but not that much money. Really? Funny how the wealthy keep the working man down. Workers should go to work today saying, I'll work today, but I'm not going to work that hard. Well, Rich?
I don't. The point is too attenuated for me.
I would agree.
What does that mean?
It's attenuated.
I don't get it.
It's attenuated. Okay, so Linda says, it seems so obvious that his response is directly related to the criticism that Boeing made about Trump's trade policy. If he was so interested in saving money for our country, why doesn't he have Melania move to the White House? Maybe she didn't want to go.
How about on the Melania thing? And I know this is a very, very different situation, but how about, for example, the dressmakers who won't make the dress for Melania because of her political views? So they're in private business; they're allowed not to work for somebody because of their political views, right? So explain what's the difference? What's the difference when if somebody doesn't want to work for somebody else based on something else?
Well, you know, like based on religion, you mean?
Well,
yes.
Your religious view is your First Amendment, right? We're talking about two, and I'm not agreeing with those people, Libby. I'm saying these are two situations where fundamental rights, whether it's First Amendment or whether it's right to privacy, you know, the penumbral right, you know, that gave rise to Roe v. Wade, where fundamental rights come into conflict, and where. On one hand, you're saying it's fine for, you know, for the Starbucks employee to not give the guy the, you know, the coffee to the guy with the Trump hat, right? And on the other hand, and I would say those are two First Amendment rights in conflict, and now we have two other fundamental rights in conflict. Explain to me the difference. One's more important than the other?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, religious
is... So the First Amendment is now a subservient amendment?
Well, I'm sorry, I understand there's a deeper issue here, but I was under the impression that in both the cases, as far as the clothing, that it was not Mrs. Trump coming to them and saying, I would like you to make this, and them refusing. It was them being asked if they would make clothes and them saying they wouldn't. It was hypothetical.
Okay,
it was not something that they turned down
and
anybody.
Let's say she went to them and said, I want you to do it, and they said, we're not going to do it because of who you are.
Okay, but all I'm saying is that didn't happen.
Okay.
Well, but Rich's point is well taken, I think there is a difference.
And by the way, Libby, I'm not defending.
I get it.
I'm not defending people not being served for orientation. I think it's as important as you do. I'm just trying to put whether these are on the same level or not.
Look,
I'm sorry.
You know.
Well, he mentioned Melania. That's what got me started.
You want to keep reading,
Alan? Is she a favorite of yours?
Go ahead.
Mr. Trump's latest tweet against Boeing is simply a normal teenage boy reaction to being criticized. The same old Trump issue of arrested development. Okay. We're a long-time listener, first-time commenter. That's the kind we like. Okay. Regarding Trump's Boeing tweet, I think Trump's Boeing tweet is a good case study for how confounding I'm finding following the president-elect's train of thought. A tweet leaves us all in the dark about motives, evidence, a cohesive outline for our future, etc. A Trump tweet leaves us with more questions than answers. How did you arrive at this conclusion that the contract can be scraped? Were you briefed? Can you cite your sources? It's a Ooh, sounds like a good academic course question. Where does the information come from? Trump needs to give us more than 140 characters. Makes me think that stories about his limited attention span are true. Well, I think so far, you know, as I say, I'm not a big fan, but I think some of this stuff really does divert attention from other things.
That's exactly what it does.
Does, in fact, make a case for a lot of Americans who think that billions of dollars for Boeing is too much and cost overruns and the rest of it. Okay. Deborah says, Trump put former CEO and chairman of Boeing, Jim McNerney, on his business advisory board. Can you make a coherent connection here?
I don't think he's. I think it makes sense. I don't because Trump said, you know, we want them to be able to make a lot of money, just not this much on this contract.
I'm telling you what it is. There was a story from somebody, I guess, the daughter, who said that he had put her in a room to contract for shades on a building or something, and she had arrived at a fair price. He walked in the room, and he said, "Are you crazy? Nah, give him, you know."
Well, that's how he's always done business.
How he's always operated.
There were thousands of stories of him bilking vendors and not paying bills,
well,
and people going out of business.
Bilking is one thing; negotiating is another.
Well, but he's done both.
That's it. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
I see. Alan says, my sense is that Boeing tweet was nothing more than a vengeful retaliation for the CEO speaking out in favor of free trade. Okay. Alan, you're right. Nobody, even taken one at a time, will do or think anything forever. My current feeling is that now's the time for my SIC, comma, this is a quote. Now's the time for my tears, and it's got a SIC in it, meaning the
mistaken,
word.
Yeah. Right.
He's not even been sworn in yet. That's from George. Boeing schmoeing. Have you discussed lately Trump's courting of Alex Jones and other dangerous purveyors of dangerous falsities? It didn't end with the election. Just go to Breitbart and read the comments. Even more than what Trump said and says are the dog whistles in support of the active courting and spreading of hate that went on during the election via Alex Jones, Breitbart, Steve Bannon, and their ilk. And that's from Barbara of Sorites.
And we have talked about that extensively, but we did talk about it specifically yesterday.
Yep. So.
All right, let's take a break. We're going to go to news. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We have other topics to talk about. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Rich Honan, and Libby Post make up the group. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Wednesday, the 7th of December. Alan Chartok is here, Rich Honan, Libby Post making up the panel. We welcome your letters, panel, P-A-N-E-L, panel, 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 at WAMC.org. And we'll be getting to some more letters in a moment. We have some other topics to talk about. And before we move on to the from the president-elect to other issues, we do want to mention that there have been a lot of questions over the last couple of weeks regarding conflicts of interest. And it was reported yesterday that since his election a few weeks ago, Donald Trump has faced serious questions about the conflicts of interest his vast business empire could create. Once he entered the White House, the president-elect sold all of his stock holdings in June to Jason, according to Jason Miller, a spokesman. There is at least one facet of his holdings that should not be an issue, according to the statement, and that is his stock portfolio. Financial filings submitted by Mr. Trump and released in May by the Federal Election Commission show that as of that month, Mr. Trump's portfolio was worth at least $22 million and included a number of the country's best-known companies, including Apple, Walmart, MasterCard. Mr. Trump's largest single holding was a stake in a multi-strategy fixed-income hedge fund managed by BlackRock that had a value of $25 million. It is not known if he sold that or smaller holdings like his investment in gold, which he listed at being worth at least $100,000.
Well, the thing that bothered me about the story was that he was on, talking on a radio program or something like that. I don't remember what it was.
I think from this particular thing, it was in
A filing.
Well, he was asked, should Americans invest in stock? And he said, no. No.
I don't like how the market's going.
Well, when the president of the United States says, I don't like the way the market is going, and it's going very well, certainly he might have something to say to do with what happens next.
Well, by the way, in June, him and everyone else didn't like the way the market was going. Okay, the fact that the market's hit 11 straight records since his election has nothing to do with it. There were a lot of people who felt the market was too overheated.
It was Stuart Varney, I think, on Fox, as I remember.
Yes, during an interview with Stuart Varney on the Fox Business Network, Mr. Trump was asked if he was an investor in the stock market now. He replied, "I did, and I got out. I did invest, and I got out, and it was actually very good timing, but I've never been a big investor in the stock market."
Well, but words have meaning and they have effect. And if you say something like that, it could absolutely affect the way people. And also, since things have been going so well under Obama, don't you think that this could in fact turn things around? That's what I would worry about with it.
Yeah,
I'm taking my money out.
First of all, people think he's a brilliant. Some people think he's a brilliant businessman. Right. And so if he says, well, I wouldn't invest in the stock market, we could see a sell-off.
Absolutely.
And a sell-off. And he loves debt. Let's not forget. Yeah. He loves debt. That's how he makes his living. It's like sort of Joe Kennedy when he made his killing during the Depression. And so this all could be working in his to his advantage. But any responsible president would not be making these kinds of economic pronouncements.
I remember Obama saying that the American economy was absolutely broken during the campaign.
Well,
and then and then a few months later when he became president, he said, no, the economy is not fundamentally broken. We can fix it. I think people say things during a campaign.
Well, they did.
And by the way, everybody in June and some people still think the market is overvalued. But I think the real point of the story is I don't think Trump selling his stock really helps the true conflict issue. I mean, the conflict issue is that he has this huge Trump organization.
It's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, and the stock, if somebody's trying to hold that up as, oh, look, I've reduced, a set of conflicts, I don't think that's very compelling. The problem is always going to be that I think he's going to have this issue about potential conflicts as long as he or any part of his family holds, any part of the Trump organization.
Would be nice to see his tax returns.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Anything on that? No? You have nothing on that, Rich?
I'm sure he'll do all the disclosures that everybody has to do.
Well,
I'm wondering what's going to happen to his audit now.
He was supposed to do... he was supposed to disclose his tax returns as a presidential candidate. And he didn't. So
Wait a minute, he's supposed to. I know, it's customary, but he didn't.
So let's see what happens when he actually does.
I think Rich makes a very valid point. He didn't have to.
No, he didn't have to.
But he should have.
Yes.
Because everybody else has done it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Patrick says, remember the Air Force One have to nuclear radiation hardened. I just read them the way they come in. They are not just transportation for U.S. presidents. They must be able to use as flying military command centers in the event of a major emergency or nuclear war.
Look, I understand it's an expensive airplane. Okay, I get that. All right, I'm not sure that it's $4 billion worth of expense, or I guess $2 billion for two of them.
Sure. I like the idea that Boeing should give us free planes, but how do they do a typical marketing offering? Buy one, get one free. Ludicrous that the government, says Garrett, should expect free Air Force One replacement. Free is usually what you pay for what you pay for it. Leave it to Trump to get work done and then weasel their way out of it.
Joe, I'd like to know historically, was it Lincoln? Lincoln made the...
His plane was something.
Yeah, no, the first presidential motorcade vehicles, I think they were made by Lincoln for a long time. Did they charge them?
You mean Ford, Lincoln, Mercury?
Yeah.
You expect me to know that off the top of my head?
I don't know. I'm trying to remember. I don't know.
There was an anti-Semite.
Ford.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Jason says, we're talking about the cost of Air Force One. Really? Trump has a cabinet full of retired generals. The military spending will be greater than we have ever seen before. What is the cost of the smokescreen is the real question. That's from Jason. Hi, Alan and panel. I like Libby, but she needs to pull her head out of the ground. I think she has more faith in the American people than she should. My opinion is the majority of Americans now read the headlines. What Donald Trump owns to his favor, Why? Which Donald Trump owns to his favor? Less people read the story, which is where the hypocrisy and lies are brought to light. Plus, the Trump supporters do not care how awful he is. Trump says Boeing is bad, therefore Boeing must be bad. Trump says he saved Carrier, so he must have saved Carrier. More people need to read further into the details.
I think people are very aware of the possible dangers to Roe v. Wade.
It's not possible.
I'm saying I think people are aware of it. I think people will follow that very closely. I think people will. We'll take lots of steps. I'm just saying to this letter writer's point, it's not people are not unaware of this issue.
Mary says, and I love this one, doesn't Time magazine realize that naming someone Person of the Year seems like an endorsement? Their self-possessed criterion for Person of the Year is the person or persons who most affected the news in our lives. But they made questionable choices in the past, most notably in 1938. I don't agree. They said Hitler was the man of the year because of that criteria, and he was. But I hear what they're saying. I didn't like to see any of these people, Stalin or others, named as the Person of the Year. Jeannie says, dear Rich, why don't you work for free? Isn't it an honor to be a lawyer? Oh, boy, you're setting him up now.
Wait, I'm not done.
So if not Boeing, should we buy our next Air Force One from a foreign company like Airbus?
No, we should buy it. We should buy it from Boeing, and Boeing should provide it for free. Yeah, I'm going to stick with that. And yes, and by the way, what's her name?
Oh, Jeannie.
Jeannie, by the way, I do a lot of work for free. And whether it's talking to schools or talking to entrepreneurs or things like that, because although people would, I think, seriously question the value of this of what I bring to it. But the
not me.
You're getting very nice letters today.
But the point is, when you're in business, you do certain things for free, and it's not because you're giving back or because you're a good person. It's part of what you do in business. And
that's another whole 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, but I think it would be more than fair to ask Boeing and its group of contractors to provide those planes for free.
So Steve says, I work for DOD, Department of Defense, R&D, Research and Development. Don't give me those initials for 3 years. The fact that the DOD is funding Boeing's $170 million statement of requirements research is in itself a sweetheart deal. Smaller companies who want to sell items to DOD almost always have to pay all the research and testing costs before their contract is acceptable. Ideally, DOD would request bids for a new Air Force One aircraft from all aircraft builders and select the new equipment based upon which bid best fulfills the statement of need.
I agree with what he's saying, but I think we all agree it's more nuanced than that, especially when you're talking about things like complex weapon systems and there's certain times when the defense manufacturers, I know I'm taking an inconsistent position, they, in a way, they have to be a partner with the government, right? There's security issues, there's technical issues, there's lots of sunk costs. I understand that they have to work together. It's always inconvenient
when Andrew Cuomo's people go out and they make no bid, you know, stuff. Some of whom may go to jail for that right now. We like this guy. Maybe he gave us some money at some point or something like that. So I don't get that. You know, I mean, I think if you got these requirements and think about not only DOD, but how about all of the stuff that the health people do, in which they develop all the primary research for drugs that are going to come on the market and then literally give it to the pharmaceuticals, which take an arm and a leg.
Well, I'd argue that, you know, with all, you know, with respect, I'd argue that Cuomo, looking, his people looking for somebody to do a large real estate development project.
Sure.
I think there's a different community of applicants there than when you're designing very high level, you know, very top secret weapon systems. You can't just put out an RFP for something like that and hope that somebody responds. So I recognize that reality. I just think that it's gone a little too far.
Yeah, but also those RFPs can be written, as we well know, so that only one person or one entity can respond to it.
That's true too.
So,
okay,
it's a complex. I think it's a more complex issue than that. So I agree with you.
Okay, but Karen says, I agree with Libby that the American people won't put up with Trump's position on breaking contracts for too long. Great if Trump reins in defense contractors overspending. But what about all those small business people who he stiffed for contractual agreements in his personal business? Is it now okay to continue that practice? Good letter. Mm-hmm. I am a liberal listener and fan of WAMC. I have to credit Rich for appearing as a guest on the panel and patiently listening to the mostly liberal comments. He handles the discussion with grace and tact. I really appreciate his opinions, even when I do not agree with them. And it says here, thanks to Rich. I don't know whether that's really a misspelling.
Thanks for the memories.
Thanks for the memories.
Or it may be thanks, you know, having to do with procurement.
Thanks, yeah.
Right. Thanks to Rich and WMC for
thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much. For an opposing viewpoint, we all need to listen. Okay. And that's from Henry. I like that letter a lot. Joel says, we don't care for Donald Trump any more than you anti-Trumps do. On and on, you continue whining about Trump. This and Trump that. When are you going to face the reality that he is going to be the president and allow him to preside? How about supporting him in that endeavor until such time as he messes up? Well, I think that's what we do. I think we are concerned.
I think you'd argue that time. You guys would argue that time has already come.
Yeah, it's already messed up. So, you know, and he hasn't even taken the oath yet.
Rebecca says, the Religious Rights Act is horrible, because it basically puts people's individual religious views above the law of our secular nation. If we lived in a homogeneous society, it wouldn't be as much of a problem, but we don't. In my political science class with Professor Blanche Blank, there were two guys in the class. I never understood a thing that was going on in that class. All I know is that they were saying homogeneous, heterogeneous, homogeneous, heterogeneous. That's all I remember. So I get a pang of regret every time I see the word homogeneous. Used. There's a word. Am I the only one concerned, says Wesley, that Paul Ryan has to explain Article 1 of the Constitution and separation of powers to the next president of the United States? That's something I used to teach to seventh graders back in the day, and that's from Wes in Schenectady. Does anybody remember what specific Paul Ryan story this is?
Yeah, Article 1 is Congress. You know, is it Congress? Is that how Congress works?
I don't know about the explanation.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's context to that. I don't know what it is.
I'm going to assume what he's saying is, you know, if you're going to make law, you have to do it through Congress. You don't do things on your own.
Yeah, by fiat.
Yeah. Right. Well, which I wish somebody had explained to the current president.
Or to the present governor.
That's your area. I'll defer to you on that one, Alan.
All right. Let's... oh, boy.
There he goes again.
Good Lord. Let's see. And just the few minutes
let's talk about the Facebook social media.
Well, I was going to do that. I don't think we have a lot of time for that, though.
Okay.
I think that's a larger issue. So I'm going to go with the...
A small issue.
Yes, with the Supreme Court and talking about Samsung. Supreme Court giving Samsung a reprieve on the Apple patent case. Unanimous Supreme Court. The Supreme Court... ruled twice yesterday, yeah. Unanimously. A unanimous Supreme Court ruled on Tuesday that Samsung may not have to give up $399 million in profits for copying parts of the distinctive look of Apple's iPhone. A federal law says that companies found liable for infringing design patents of an article of manufacture are liable for their total profits. The decision in Samsung versus Apple turned on the meaning of the quoted phrase. Basically saying that an article of manufacture may sometimes be the entire product sold to consumers, here Samsung's phones, and sometimes be the components found to have infringed a design patent.
Take it, Rich.
So the parts of a whole, right?
Yeah. So I'm not a patent attorney, okay?
Play one on the radio.
This is the first. I think this is the first design patent case in front of the Supreme Court
in forever.
Like, yeah, 100 years. And I meant to look up the last case to see like what the technology was. So the idea was that Samsung was found to have infringed on elements of the design, which were like the rounded face of the phone, the black screen, and the colored icons, the 16
yes.
colored icons. And so the question is, are each of those a separate component? and then you have to figure out what was the damage due to the infringement of that component versus once you infringe, you infringe, and so the whole $399 million, which was the profits from the phone.
Winner take all.
Yeah, Supreme Court did a couple of interesting things, and I'm not a huge Supreme Court watcher, but some very interesting things. First, just on the law, they said, no, each of those is a separate component, and we have to send it back to the lower court to figure out if you violated one or two or three or all of those components, and if so, what the damages are. One of the things they said, Justice Sotomayor said, we've been invited to apply this test of how we would do it, and we declined. Yeah. We're going to send that to the lower court. So it was unanimous. It was 8-0. It was also, if anybody read Sotomayor. It was really short. I mean, Supreme Court decisions, it was
really...
Well,
they do that a lot.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of... It's almost like they have this, you know, kind of truncated court, and it's almost like they're just, you know... They got right down to business. They all agreed on it. They said, yeah, there's a really sticky issue here that we're not going to look at all.
We don't want to do the work.
Yeah, and they're probably right. That's something for the lower court. And they wrote this very brief, very business-like decision, and I like that they acknowledged what they were going to decide and what they were going to stay away from. So pretty interesting.
Okay, when it goes back to the lower court, Rich, then what happens? So, now they've been basically reprimanded in a way.
Oh, well.
So, yeah. So.
Samsung?
No, the lower court.
The lower court.
It's an issue of first impression in this technology century. So I don't think the circuit court is going to feel that bad about it. I'd be shocked if this thing doesn't settle.
Well,
but
a year and a half ago, there was a very long Vanity Fair piece about this.
Yeah,
that Samsung just keeps ripping off other companies' patents and plans, and then they make their millions by doing that.
Yeah, and then Apple
wanted to try to put a stop to it, but then Apple pays Samsung to make chips for them.
Yeah.
It's this little vicious circle.
It's globalization.
Yeah.
Well, we'll end there. Thank you very much. Thanks to everyone for being with us. We will continue with the program, and we will have more panel tomorrow, and we'll have more roundtable right after this.